This is Alex White, author of The Gearheart at www.thegearheart.com, and you're listening to Compensating Controls.
Synaptic Jam Productions presents Compensating Controls, the debut podcast novel from author James Keeling. Warning: parental guidance suggested for some language and mild to extreme scenes of violence.
Good day and welcome to episode number 17. Prime, baby. Prime. I've been told that I need to have a female voice. So here.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 17 of Compensating Controls. We won't waste any time. So, let's see where we're at.
Oh yeah, the Mall of America. Nick and Cassandra are standing by the south exit of Bloomingdale's, mere feet away from freedom when they're told to stop by a rough voice. They've been caught. Is this the end?
Remember that Agent Hoffman has tracked them down to the mall as well and is on his way. Will he be in time? Let's find out.
Chapter 36.
Nick and Cassandra stood, facing the exit doors, arms raised. Escape only 10 yards away. Freedom.
Turn around slowly, the gruff voice commanded. They turned.
Thomas Reed, a 42-year-old divorcee, had been a stop-loss prevention officer for 8 years, and he was damn good at his job. He'd seen the men liberate the jacket back in menswear, and had surreptitiously kept an eye on them as they had traversed the store. He'd seen them turn away from the east exit, obviously wanting to avoid the automatic sensors. He didn't know what they were thinking, though. The south entrance sensor worked just as well. But he had them now. He'd allowed his hand to drop to the taser located on his web belt, just in case. There was a lot of gang activity at the mall, and these days you never could be too careful. At least these two were showing the proper respect. When Nick saw Thomas, he dropped his hands in relief. Then he looked behind the security guard and saw yet another man, with a telltale earpiece, working his way quickly towards them from across the store. The man's right hand was reaching into the inside of his jacket.
"Look out! He's got a gun!"
Nick screamed.
"I'm not gonna fall for that,"
Thomas said in exasperation.
"That jacket is store property, buddy."
Then the screams began as the shoppers who had heard Nick saw the man in question pull from his holster a silenced handgun. Nick turned back towards the door, only to see the car from the east entrance pull up.
"Shit,"
Nick said as he once again grabbed Cassandra by the arm and ran. They ran to the left, dodging behind the clothes-draped displays and stands of hangers. Thomas turned, and upon seeing the man with the gun, pulled his taser from its place, bringing it up to point it at the oncoming gunman.
"Stop right there!"
The words literally died on his lips as the first two bullets took him in the chest, the headshot of the triple tap dropping him where he stood. Hawk took off after the two fugitives. Nick and Cassandra ducked into yet another drab gray hallway and started running, the adrenaline pumping through his system urging him on. He had let go of her hand and was running a few steps in front when he skidded to a stop. She nearly ran him over as he took a right turn, heading down a short hallway. They pushed through the door and emptied out into the first floor causeway by the Gap store on the south side of the mall. Looking to the right, they saw another large man, the one who had been standing outside of Bloomingdale's entrance. They saw the earpiece just as he turned and saw them. He began taking long strides in their direction. They turned to the left and fled, weaving between shoppers and around strollers. About halfway down, they turned right and headed towards the center of the mall. It amazed Nick to realize that two people had died in the last 15 minutes, and no one in the mall had even appeared to notice. It lent a sense of the surreal to the whole situation as they ran along. Legoland, a massive array of statues built out of abnormally large Legos, stood guard to the south entrance to the theme park. Beneath the spacemen and starships, a large area had been set up for children to play with the literally thousands of Lego pieces, and it was through this chaos that Nick and Cassandra ran. Nick almost lost his balance on a few of the pieces scattered over the floor, but caught himself, and they disappeared into the crowds of Nickelodeon Universe. Moments after the two had entered the indoor amusement park, Moose pushed through the crowds at the south entrance, his height giving him visibility as he scanned the shoppers and theme park goers for his quarry. He saw the two of them heading north and began plowing through the crowds after them. Nick and Cassandra ran past the entrance to the Avatar Airbender and past the Splatosphere as they threaded their way through the park. Glancing to their left, they saw the first gunman wandering around the park, and they ducked down. They headed to the right, past the balloon race ride, and through the entrance of a small arcade. Nick took her to a back staircase, and they ran up the steps, coming out onto a deserted veranda that boasted an impressive view of the amusement park. Nick pulled her to the back wall, where they weren't visible from the rest of the crowd. He leaned over and placed his hands on his knees, panting heavily.
What is this place?
Cassandra asked, staring at what appeared to be old West buildings.
They're meeting rooms for kids and stuff,
Nick huffed, trying to catch his breath.
They're not used that often. Most people don't even know about this area. Here, come on, let's get out of here.
He led her up a ramp that led to the second floor of the mall. As they turned away from the amusement park and passed an escalator, Cassandra glanced over her shoulder and was surprised to see a huge 30-foot-tall cutout of Dora the Explorer with her arm raised in the air as if waving goodbye. When they hit the concourse, they took a left and headed north, back towards the East Mall entrance. They were intentionally keeping their pace slow so as not to draw unwanted attention. Nick just knew that right around the next corner, or behind the next column, would be a man with a gun. When they reached the rotunda, Nick glanced down to the ground floor where police and paramedics were dealing with the apparent jumper who had plummeted to his death. As he looked down on the scene, he saw a portly man that looked somehow familiar, a face that he couldn't quite place. Realization dawned on him. It was the same federal agent he had seen back at Allied Computing. "We've really got to go," he said as they turned to the right and made their way to the skywalk, located directly above the main east entrance. The skywalk connected the mall with a large four-story east parking garage. As they exited the mall, Nick glanced to his left and saw a small office with the words Bloomington Police in large blue letters. The door was closed and nobody could be seen at the desk inside. They walked through the doors leading into the skywalk and ran straight into a large group of children. They were being herded by a harried-looking woman towards the mall. They stepped to the right to let the group pass. Nick looked out the window and noticed that he could see the east ground floor exit of Bloomingdale's from this vantage point. As he watched, he noticed the ape of a man he had seen earlier staring straight back at him. The man began walking purposefully in their direction.
"Come on!"
Nick shouted at Cassandra as he roughly pushed through the group of children, causing many of them to topple like bowling pins. They raced past the startled woman and bounded down the short flight of stairs into the parking garage beneath a large sign that read P2 Georgia. They ran left, down the stairs to the ground floor, past the P1 Main sign, and then straight across to the Metro Transit Station entrance. Cassandra almost screamed when she saw the two police cruisers parked in front of the east entrance, but managed to swallow her fear as they opened the doors to the transit station and rushed through. Issuing the escalator to the lower level, they raced down the stairs instead. They turned left and, busting through a large set of double doors, entered the boarding area for the Bus and Light Rail Transit, or LRT. They ran to the left and entered the train platform beneath the To All Trains sign. A train was just pulling into the station.
"Stop right there!"
the voice barked from across the road. They turned to see the burly man holding a silenced pistol in his hands, aiming right at them. There was about 20 yards between them, and Nick was sure the man was an excellent shot. They froze. Bear grinned. He'd humped his way up and down that damn road, sitting on the very fringe of the op with nothing to do but wait. Then he had been forced to maintain his cool while walking past two police cruisers without drawing attention. Now he had the marks. He had them in his sights, dead to rights.
"Bear, I've got 'em, Mark 1 and Mark 2. Transit station, LRT platform. I've got a bead, 20 yards.
"Ah, good job, Bear. Can you escort?"
"Bear, they might separate and attempt evasion. Orders."
"Ah, Moose, proceed to east entrance for rendezvous. Ferret, proceed to transit station for pickup. Bear?"
There was a pause.
"Take down Mark number 2. Mark number 1 will be compliant. Moose, Bear?"
"Yeah, Moose."
"Don't miss."
"I won't."
Not surprisingly, the two hadn't moved. Bear lined up his shot.
Not your lucky day, is it?
He yelled.
Me? I'm as lucky as hell. I'm the one who gets to put you down.
Chapter 37. The driver stopped outside the east entrance to the Mall of America, directly beneath the skywalk. Agent Hoffman and Officer Hernandez exited the vehicle and proceeded inside. Peter had seen the structure as he had flown into the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, located directly north of the mall, but had incorrectly assumed it was a rather large business complex. Well, in a sense, it actually was. They walked down the short hallway and worked their way around the glass elevators to the rotunda. The mall seemed to extend forever. To his right and left, Peter saw the shop-lined hallways, which were impressive. But it was the view past the rotunda and out across Nickelodeon Universe, which boggled his mind. Natural skylight streamed down through the vaulted ceiling, and the sheer enormity of the mall hit him. There were people everywhere, many of them completely ignoring the taped-off area and police presence. As they ducked under the police tape, Julio left Peter to join Agent Dunn, who was talking to a uniform over by the escalators. Peter gave the area a quick cursory examination. Tables, many of them still arranged in an orderly fashion, dotted the round rotunda area. A large banner had been hung on the back side of the elevators announcing the first annual IADRO convention. First and last, thought Peter, as he saw the literally thousands of porcelain fragments all over the floor. A gaggle of collectors was grouped just outside the tape, talking animatedly to a police officer, who was trying and ultimately failing to keep them calm. Agent Hoffman slowly strolled around the scene, noting the body on the floor and the position of the table he had apparently fallen on. Peter glanced up, examining the other floors, and silently reconstructed the actual fall in his mind. The man had fallen from either the second, third, or fourth floor and landed on the table. From the looks of it, the ensuing panic had knocked over a number of other tables, spilling their precious cargo onto the floor as well. After mentally cataloging the scene, Peter took in the crowd of gawkers, which ran from the prototypical shopper to the visiting group of Japanese tourists, complete with a stereotypical bevy of cameras flashing and clicking away at everything in sight. Peter joined the others who were already conversing with one of the uniformed officers.
As best as we can tell, Officer Woods was saying, the jumper fell from the third floor right by the escalator. Witnesses say he cracked his neck on the second floor landing just prior to crashing onto the table. There is no identification.
Any sign of the two fugitives? Asked Julio.
No, sir. Of course, we've been pretty busy, the man replied.
Peter injected himself into the conversation.
Hello, Officer Woods. My name is Special Agent Hoffman. We're going to need camera footage for this area and whatever else you've got. We don't have any, sir.
What?
Peter responded incredulously. I'm sure this whole place is plastered with the things. It is. The first thing I did was request the footage. But the IT guy says we don't have any. Apparently all the cameras went offline about a half an hour ago. I've got my tech guys looking into it.
Julio stared at the officer in disbelief.
What the hell? He said.
Peter wandered away from them and approached the group of Japanese tourists. Although a couple of them looked nervous, their tour guide addressed Peter, speaking perfect English. Peter asked the guide if any of their party had seen either the jumper or anything that might be suspicious. One of the tourists, an elderly gentleman, took a hesitant step forward and addressed the tour guide. After a short conversation in Japanese, the man held up his digital camera, turning it so Peter could see the view screen on the back. He scrolled through a few pictures of the mall and then stopped on one of the supposed jumper, talking to none other than Cassandra. He scrolled further and then showed Peter a picture of a dark-complexioned Nick and Cassandra running towards the camera.
I knew it, Peter thought as he gazed at the frightened expression of Cassandra and the determined expression of Nick.
Using the tour guide as an interpreter, Peter asked the elderly man if he could please borrow the memory card from the camera. Once his request had been translated, the man took a short step backwards, holding his camera close to his chest. Peter folded his hands together and held them low in front of him. He cast his gaze at the floor in front of the elderly man as he repeated his request to the guide, saying that it would be very helpful and promising to return the card to whatever hotel the man was staying at. Once the guide translated his request for a second time, the Japanese man straightened up, pulled the memory card from the camera, and held it out in front of him. Still keeping his gaze lowered, Peter reached out and gently took the card from the man, bowing slightly at the waist. The man nodded in return. Peter took two of his business cards from his breast pocket and presented one to the tour guide and one to the gentleman, once again bowing slightly. Peter slotted the card into his PDA as he approached the crime scene, bringing up the pictures.
"They were here, all right," Peter said as he showed the others the pictures. "I'll even bet they had something to do with this guy's unfortunate demise. But where are they now?"
Officer Woods' handset squawked and he turned away from the group to answer it. Moments later, he spun around to face the others.
"There's been a shooting in Bloomingdale's. First floor."
All four of them set off at a fast-paced walk down the south-facing hallway, heading for Bloomingdale's and the unfortunate body of Thomas Reed.
Poor Nick and Cassandra. They can't seem to win, can they? I'm still waiting for tips, so we'll forego those for this podcast. As for the feedback, how do you think it's going? Are the sappy parts too sappy? Do I do them justice? It's been asked that I use a female voice for the podcast. I'm mulling that about my skull. Shall I try it? Would it be too jarring in the podcast to have Cassandra's voice actually read by a flesh-and-blood female? Let me know. It's promo time. Actually, we have no promo this week. That's right, I do not have a promo to play. If you would like to have your promo played on this podcast, less than a minute, please. Please let me know via Twitter, email, whatever. My only request is that for me to play your promo, I would really appreciate it if you could provide a bumper. And if you don't know what that is, ask. That's it. So, back to the podcast. Well, that's all I've got. So once again, let me put on my big boy voice. This is James Keeling of Synaptic Jam Productions, wishing you clear skies and a crimson sunset.
You have been listening to Compensating Controls, the breakout novel by podcast author James Keeling. For more information and more content, please visit the website at www.jameskeeling.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Synaptic Jam, or like me on Facebook, also at Synaptic Jam. Music and sounds generously provided by Incompetech.com and Freesound.org. Compensating Controls is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported license, so please share it with everyone and spread the word. Just don't change it or make money off it. Or if you do, please send that money to me. Swiss bank account available upon request.
I need a pen. I want my pencil.
Okay.
Cassandra glanced over her shoulder and was surprised to see a huge 30-foot-tall... 30? What's a 30?
And ran straight into a large group of children being herded by a harried-looking woman through the skywalk and towards the mall. They stepped to the right to let the group pass. Nick looked out the window and noticed that he could see the east ground floor exit of Bloomingdale's from his van.
Jeez, Jim, you and your big long sentences. Period. They
walked through. Cassandra almost screamed when she saw the two police cruisers parked in front of the east entrance to the mall.
You're rushing like a racehorse. Woo! Stop right there! Stop right there!
Yeah, see, I can get that better. He's barking.
Stop right there!
She didn't change.
Then he had been forced to maintain his cool. Then he had been forced to maintain his cool.
Hawk, good job, Bear. Can you escort? Good job, Bear. Can you escort?
This was becomes were.
Talking animatedly.
Scene change. Or scene, or whatever.
What? What am I hearing there? What? Peter responded. What am I hearing?
Nick and Cassandra are standing by the south exit of Bloomingdale's. Wow, Bloomingdale's.
Remember that Agent Hellman has tracked them. Oh my God. That Agent Hoffman has tracked them down to the mall. Oh, for Pete's sake.